You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
Monday was fine, yeah. and you know, today is okay.
Yeah. just day by day.
It is what it is, man. I've just been kind of in my little bit of a writing funk. I've gotten back on track writing, and when I do, it gets me, I kind of go into another place.
Another dimension?
When I come out, in another dimension.
Oh, I was going to do Beastie Boys.
Oh.
Another dimension.
Okay, so yeah, when I come out of it, I kind of get all like moody and ugh. And the traffic getting here did not help.
What the hell, man?
Yeah, there was an accident down the tollway, and that's, you know, wonderfully, the studio is right off the tollway, and so that's part of the problem. But we are here now to talk about films,
yay,
movies. No, you know what? Tonight, we're actually going to be talking about a film. This was truly shot on film. I know this because the film grain was
pretty
so bad.
I know, I couldn't tell if that was Netflix's transfer or if that's the way it looked in theaters.
No, that was film. That was a straight transfer from the film or something.
You know, I was just listening to another podcast today. So guys, you don't need to listen to any other podcasts. You just listen to mine and I'll fill you in on what you're missing on other podcasts. So here's what they were talking about. That whole digital versus film, I don't want to say it's an argument, but it's certainly a topic of conversation that film buffs like to, you know, those pretentious motherfuckers who, well, look and dress like me, who are always like, well, film is just so warm and grainy. You can't get the look from digital. Digital's just something. Yeah, I know. It's fucking replaced with clarity and detail. Yeah. You're right. It's not warm and fuzzy. You're one of those motherfuckers, aren't
you? Well, I'm not one of those motherfuckers. I like the feel of original film.
I dig
watching original film.
Right.
There's something about the way it looks that you can't really replicate now with digital. But I do like being able to see stuff. Like for my sci-fi, you know, my new sci-fi, not like old Star Wars. I could deal with film with old Star Wars. But if I'm watching something like, you know, the
Pacific
new Star
Rim.
Trek, the Pacific Rim, I don't want film grain.
No.
I want that to be crystal clear.
Yes.
I want to jump into it. And you can't get the success you have with 3D films now.
Oh, no.
With film, that kind of film grain. There's no way you could transfer that in a satisfying way.
Yeah.
It has to be clear. It has to be digital.
Yeah. And just the workflow of working on film. Like, there's so many things that allow you to be more creative on set. When you get immediate feedback like that I'm sorry, you can't wait around for your film to be shipped off to Florida to be developed.
Exactly.
The year 2013, for Christ's sake.
I love this. We did our little blowhard debate about film
there
to open up this episode of The Editing Bay on the Next Wave Radio Network. My name's Joe.
And I'm Joel.
And today we are getting into the holiday spirit with a film that Joel suggested. A little movie called Jack Frost, starring Michael Keaton and Kelly Preston.
starring is a, a word I would use loosely.
I think that it's unfair that Michael Keaton gets top billing in this movie when, like, he's only actually in, like, 3 minutes of it.
That's true. Well, he provides the voice, though.
But, so what? I could do a voice. He could have done all his work in an afternoon.
That's right. He may have.
Kelly Preston and this poor kid had to, like, be on this film set for probably 2 months
that
in
kid,
the snow and cold.
That kid puts in a pretty stellar performance. I'm surprised we haven't seen him. Uh-oh. Debatable?
I hope you're being sarcastic about that.
You know what? Kid actors are hard to find. It's hard to find good kid actors. And I
don't believe that anymore. Look at stuff like Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Like, those kids are all brilliant.
You're right. Not anymore because, 20 years later, look at Modern Family. Any kids from the cast of Modern Family would have blown this kid away.
Yeah.
But we're also looking at it. I said 20 years. Was it like 15 years after the fact?
This movie came out in 93.
No, 98.
98.
Yeah.
Okay. All
so
right, no, you're right.
Kind of Sixth Sense era. And so you remember when, like, Haley Joel Osment was in Sixth Sense. That was a big deal to find a kid who could deal with these heavy themes.
He just whispered.
And can cry on command. It just looked morose. He was the original goth, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
In a way.
Well, Edward Scissorhands was kind of predated him.
Yeah, you might be right.
Okay, so this film is about Jeff and I were talking about this in the parking lot. He's like, man, if Joel doesn't show up, I don't know. I haven't seen this. I guess it's about some POS dad who... And I was like, yeah, well, he's not really a piece of shit. He's not really a piece of shit. He's just kind of putting his own desires, his own dreams before his family.
Sure.
And understandable. The guy's a musician. He's trying to make it. He's trying to make a living for his family. They're living in a really nice home, though. Like, mom is a banker.
I know.
And he's a musician.
Yeah.
Who apparently goes on, like, tours. So he's doing okay for themselves.
He's not beating her. He treats her nice. They have a nice little
rapport.
They've
got a good family. He treats his son really well. He always comes back. He brings presents. He's a really loving dad. It's just that sometimes he doesn't make it to his kids' hockey games.
Well, sorry. You want to live in this fucking mansion and have your...
Going to your peewee hockey games isn't going to pay the mortgage. So the kid, you know, he's letting his son down.
Yeah.
But he's in no way, shape, or form a POS dad.
No.
One of the first things that I noticed in this movie is... you know, it opens up with Michael Keaton kind of doing a very bad ripoff of, like, if you've ever heard the Bruce Springsteen Santa Claus is Coming to Town, It's kind of like what Michael Keaton's doing with his blues band to Frosty the Snowman.
Exactly.
And
him singing, too, obviously.
It is him singing, And the guy playing piano, speaking of Game of Thrones, The guy who plays piano for him is the dude who plays Robert Baratheon.
Mark Addy is his name, yeah.
And I was like, I recognize him. Holy shit, that guy would go on to be in, like, one of the biggest TV shows of all time.
See, I know him from The Full Monty and the Flintstones sequel.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Jeff shaking his head over there. You remember that? After John Goodman. Surprisingly, John Goodman didn't want to come back and do a Flintstones.
It wasn't good enough for John Goodman.
No.
Oh, God, but he did Matinee and King Ralph.
Ooh.
That's
which is also on the list.
Yeah.
Future upcoming episodes of The Editing Bay.
So, he's performing this Frosty the Snowman song.
Frosty.
With his band, the Jack Frost Band.
The Snowman? Yeah, do they ever really explain? I mean, they touch on it. Because his name?
It's his name.
His name is Jack Frost.
Yeah.
You can't do that in a movie like this.
His name is Jack Frost.
That's fucking bullshit.
In fact, he brings it back to that later.
I know.
Okay, so
let's talk about
what this is. He and his band, they're playing this tune, and there's some like punk dude like in the audience, and he pulls a fucking Back to the Future.
I saw that.
Where he like pulls out his phone. He's like, "Hey Don, check this out." And he just holds out his phone.
You know that new sound you've been looking for?
He's like, "It's hip. It's happening." It's like this is like Eric Clapton style, like hang out with your fucking uncle and his friends blues.
Not even that. It's like bad drunken Billy Joel covers from the late 90s.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which they like they almost smash cut to like an exterior shot outside, and it's a radio and they're playing his song. And the guy's like, "Oh yeah, that was from last night's Jack Frost show. Don't ask us how we got it, because we ain't telling. This is Central Colorado's classic rock, playing music from the 70s and 90s. But they're playing some unsigned local band.
Exactly.
But they're classic rock. Like, that makes no sense. And that's just the radio geek in me.
It's like the Adventure Club.
Right.
And then he says something like, "Man, when are these guys going to get a break? Right. Like, they're so hot, the world is clamoring for some
but
Jack
like,
Frost
this
band."
Is, to know radio business, like, this is the kind of station, like, they would just be playing, like, Rolling Stones, Zeppelin, AC/DC. Like, that's what they would play. And there is no, like, 70s and 90s classic rock station. It was really odd. It was like the writer just kind of I want to just shoehorn this in. There's got to be a reason why we're playing this song. Yeah, dude.
Continuity.
Yeah. It's just a little too tidy.
That's you nitpicking, being in the industry. I totally understand, especially after I just went off on my diatribe about film versus digital.
Uh-huh.
That didn't bump me so much. But the rest of the movie makes up for that, because that bumped me. The following 141 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Not 141 minutes. 1 hour and 41 minutes.
It just
felt like.
It was an hour and 41 minutes. In fact, I think I said on Facebook, I was like, wow, this movie's 141 minutes long. I have 135 minutes left, or an hour and 35 minutes left, and I want to be fucking gone. I want to be done with this movie.
It took me 3 hours to get through it last night because I would get distracted. I got my new Xbox, by the way.
Oh, did you?
So, like, in between downloading shit to the Xbox and, like, you know, trying to punch in codes, I would flip back and forth. And I was like,
back to Jack Frost.
I guess I got to get back to this movie for the podcast tomorrow. This was my pick. I have no one else to blame but myself.
Let's move on. What do you have so far?
I just want to, what do I have so far in my list of notes as far as the movie
On your
goes?
Notes. What do you have? What do you want to touch on?
Have we even really explained? I mean, there's not much plot to this movie.
No.
It's this, I don't want to call him a deadbeat, but he's like not, you said.
He's a dad that's upsetting his son. He's disappointing his son.
But again, his career's a little late in taking off. I mean, he's just now getting some traction, but he's got this hot wife at home and the kid. And basically, I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. He dies in a car accident. His soul gets brought back
a year later,
form of a snowman. And then comedy ensues, I guess. So that's pretty much all you need to know about this movie.
Okay, first of all, before we move forward on this,
yeah,
can I just say, dude, not sure I can handle the Dead Parents movies still. I'm not quite sure I'm ready for that yet.
You know, I gotta admit, I was like watching this and be like, now I feel like an asshole for picking this movie because it's just like, oh, hey, it's the holiday season and there's death all around us.
Yes. But it was. I think it's a good choice. It's definitely what it is we're looking for on the podcast.
Yes.
So yeah, he dies in a car wreck, and a year later comes back in a snowman's body.
And so here's the only thing, the only sense I can make of how this movie ever got made, is that they wanted to make a live action Frosty the Snowman, but couldn't get the rights to this. Well, I guess they got the rights to the song. There's some fair use arguments to be made as far as doing covers. But don't want to call it Frosty the Snowman. Let's go with Jack Frost. Fine, I'll give you that. But it's basically, you know, taking the lyrics, you know, you build a snowman and then you put the hat on him and he comes to life for a day. And so I think that was the genesis of this movie, obviously. Uh-huh. And it's like, well, how do you got to flesh it out and make it into a movie. We need a story here. What's the story?
And like somebody an hour had, and 41 minutes.
Exactly. But somebody had the brain dead idea to like make it this father-son movie and the father dies. Because who doesn't love, you know, what do you want in your Christmas movies? I want dead family member.
Dead parent. And that seems so extreme.
It's so the entire first act, the first half hour of this is just like, it's so heart-wrenching. And there's like crying. I'm like, this is, when does Gremlins come on? I want to watch Love Actually.
Even Gremlins has, which they're doing at Alamo Drafthouse next week.
Fuck yeah, they are on there.
Did you notice like right after he died?
Yeah.
And it's like the 1 year later and it comes back to his kid in school.
Right.
And like the bullies are picking on him. And he wouldn't react and he starts walking away.
Yeah.
And like one of the kids goes, he's no fun to pick on now since his old man died.
No, it's like
who writes
that's
this?
Awful. What an awful, mean spirited thing to think. And it's kids, you know, out of the mouths.
But still, I mean, it's such a lowest common denominator kind of piece of dialogue. Like, hey, if you didn't catch on, his father died, and that's what's going on with him. The script was written by Mark Steven Johnson.
Who is that?
He wrote Grumpy Old Men.
Oh, I love that movie.
He wrote and directed Daredevil.
Okay. Now we're starting to lose me.
What else did he write? I think he directed Ghost Rider.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Now it's all coming into focus now.
Yeah, there you go.
I understand where this came from. But this, and I noticed the director did like a lot of TV and like music videos, and that's kind of what you would expect. And that's kind of what it feels like. There's not a lot of redeeming qualities in the video or in the movie at all, I think.
No.
The filming. Every now and then we can grab onto something. Like the last time we sat in the studio, we talked about Monkey Bone.
Yeah.
And say what you will about that movie. And we did listen to that episode. And we said a lot. But at least there's some visually arresting things going on in that
visuals
movie. There's some creativity.
They did well with that.
This one, I don't know what do you take away?
Henry Rollins. Henry Rollins was my favorite part of the movie.
Who is Henry Rollins?
He was the hockey coach.
Oh, yeah.
And then he was the father that got like, you know, freaked out by the snowman.
By the, that's right. Oh,
that,
yeah, I forgot.
That was it. Henry Rollins was the best part of this
movie.
He's
the musician, right? Who?
Yeah, he's part of Rollins' band. He also does spoken word stuff.
He does a lot of cartoon voices, doesn't he?
I don't know about
cartoon.
I think he
does like Batman and shit.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know if he does cartoon voices, but I just know did a lot of spoken word stuff.
Speaking of Batman, there's a heavy Batman theme going on in
this Warner Brothers movie.
It's a Warner Brothers movie.
Michael Keaton was Batman.
In it, but do you know the further Batman connection? I can tell from your furrowed brow the answer is no. Here's what it is. Okay, so originally, Michael Keaton wasn't supposed to star in this movie. This was going to be a George Clooney vehicle.
Oh, get out of town.
Yeah, George Clooney was cast already in the movie. They were planning production. In fact, so far that Jim Henson, they made the snowman puppet, which we'll get to in
a
second.
He kind of resembles George Clooney.
Very much so. They designed that snowman puppet outfit around George Clooney.
Wow.
Not only to like, you know, fit his like features and stuff, but apparently the way they made the joints and the way the head turned, they tried to mimic his acting style. So it really like, which I don't know what George Clooney's acting style is.
George Clooney's acting style. All I can think of is George Clooney, every movie he's in, he sits at a bar.
There's
always a shot of him sitting at a bar, hunched over.
And he does that move where he'll give a quick smirk, and then he'll look down, and it just melts my heart.
Yeah.
I mean, not my heart, but
that's
girls'
That's his
hearts.
Move. I feel like that's in every contract.
Yeah. He's pretty dreamy.
Mm-hmm.
What was I talking about?
No, George Clooney.
So George Clooney was cast in this, and They build this whole puppet around him. Okay, so just so you know, the second two acts of the movie, there's no Michael Keaton. You hear his voice, but there's this walking, talking snowman, which I was sitting here watching it. My brother, I was subjecting it to him sitting next to me on the couch.
Your poor brother.
Guy. I know. He was like, why are you watching? I'm like, I do this podcast. Don't ask. But he thought it was computer generated. I'm like, man, this is 1998.
There were a couple of computer generated shots.
Now, there were some shots where you see, like, you know, where he's got to be on a sled and where he's throwing snowballs at like 50 miles an hour. Really odd stuff.
That whole chase sequence?
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a second.
But for the most part, so the costume is this alien-looking a snowman costume.
It's terrifying.
It's really nightmare-inducing.
It was, like, genuinely terrifying when he came to life and he's, like, looking in the window and stuff. I was disturbed.
Can you imagine being, like, a nine-year-old boy and, like, looking out the window?
I thought that kid's reaction was very genuine.
He did the Macaulay Culkin Home Alone slapped the side of the face.
Oh, yeah.
But knowing that it was designed for George Clooney and designed to look like him and act like him, once you know that, and I read it before I started watching the movie, I couldn't not see George Clooney in that. So I don't think it's worth a repeat viewing, but if anybody's listening and they're going to watch it, just know that going in and try to picture or try to hear George Clooney's voice.
There's so much stuff, so much bad voice acting that Michael Keaton did in this movie, especially during like the chase and when they're like, you know, they're playing hockey together and it's just so, yeah, you got it.
I know. Good.
I was like, oh,
it's a skill. Not to say he's not a bad actor, but that is a very specific skill. Obviously, you know it because you've spent the majority of your life behind a microphone.
He did a much better job in Toy Story 3. As the Ken doll.
So maybe if anything good came out of this movie.
It gave him some training before Toy Story.
Practice for George. But just to wrap up the whole George Clooney story. So ironically, the reason he didn't end up doing this movie, because he was cast in Batman and Robin.
Oh, wow.
He left this movie to do Batman and Robin.
I wonder which movie did better.
That's a good question. I should look that up. Well, here, I can give you some stats on this one while we're talking about it. Okay, so it's got a 4.9 on IMDb.
Out of how much? 10?
It's got to be 20, but I think it's 10, which it seems unimaginable.
Yeah, that seems unlikely. It's higher than I would think it would be.
Rotten Tomatoes a little more on spot. 40% with audiences, but 20% out of the critics like this movie. It was made for, you want to take a guess on what the budget was for this movie?
The budget for this movie?
You're dealing with puppets now. Jim Henson Company.
15 to 20 mil?
Oh, no, $85 million.
$85 million.
$85 million to make this movie.
I'm thinking like low numbers, just because everything was so practical.
It
like
was
they had
very,
a lot of practical,
very vanilla,
locations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not a lot of action. Well, no. I guess there are three snowball fights in this movie. Two of them happen within the first 12 minutes of the movie. I was like, this is like snowball fight the movie.
Uh huh.
They probably would have gotten a bigger audience. Yeah.
And they say balls. A lot.
They do say balls.
There's so much like balls humor.
It's the PG-13.
My balls are freezing, and I never thought I'd be happy that happened. And
that's part of the problem with this movie is just like the writing and the poor lines that he's given.
Uh-huh.
And at one point, Snowman Michael Keaton, there's this getaway chase scene, and they're on a sled, and he gets pelted with a couple of snowballs that land like right on his chest, and look like boobs.
I like crass like humor as much as the next guy, but this was just it wasn't funny the way it was done.
It's funny when Trey Parker and Matt Stone do it in South Park stuff, because it's tempered with some a little more high minded humor.
Yeah,
here it's just all lowest common denominator. So $85 million, and then it ended up grossing just under $35 million. So didn't even make half of it back. And opening weekend, I don't even think it cracked like $7 million. So it was an immediate flop.
What I found interesting about this movie is the fact that there was a like B horror flick that came out a year before called Jack Frost, with Shannon Elizabeth getting like killed in a shower.
And the ratings are higher, and it made more money. So they should have quit while they were ahead with the Jack Frost.
They should have just made it a sequel. They should have made this a sequel.
No, now I would see. And that's the other thing. And we'll get, because later in the show, we always do like a recast or remake.
Yeah.
But I think this could be a horror movie.
Yeah.
You take a very dark turn. You still make it the father's son, but now the father's here to kill.
Father's back for revenge. Yeah.
We don't know why. Maybe because he made him miss that big gig. That was going to be his, he was going to get signed by a big label.
That's true. We make it almost kind of like a Danny Torrance kind of thing, where like Michael Keaton didn't love his son.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he was coming back to finish the job.
See, that would have been entertaining instead of the fucking downer that we're left with movie. It is just, you're right, it's so depressing.
It's this downer, but what they do, they try to steal like note for note, and I don't know if you caught this, it felt like they were trying to rip off E.T.
Yeah, but you can say that. Let's see. So 98. When did E.T. come out? 82?
Yeah. I think 80, 82.
So every movie. I mean, you want to talk about an E.T. ripoff. We got to do Mac and Me someday.
Right. No, but I'm talking like especially near the end where he's like, I'll be right here.
Oh, you know.
And he like touches his heart. And I was like, dude, that's E.T.
That
like,
line.
I'll be right here.
Nobody can do that line again.
No.
Yeah.
No one can do that line and touch someone in the chest.
Well, exactly.
I'll
be right
here.
Yeah.
Come on, dude.
And if we're going to talk about that scene and it ripping off, it ripped off E.T. with that, and then it totally, you know what I'm talking about?
Uh-huh.
It goes Swayze.
Oh, yeah. Oh, total Swayze.
Okay, so we're jumping to the end here, but there's not much in the middle to talk about.
Well, he finally reveals himself to Kelly Preston,
who's
his wife,
who this whole time, so the kid knows him, and they're having a relationship and realizes that the snowman is
his dad.
The
kid's, like, walking the snowman through town on a sled and, like, arguing with it while pulling him through town. No one's noticing that this snowman is talking.
That's another thing, too. Every time they cut away, it's like, and for a while there, I thought, is he the only one who can see him talk?
Right.
But no, because then he talks to that bully kid at the end.
Uh-huh. Well, he talks to the bully kid at the end. He talks to the wife. He calls the wife on the phone.
Henry Rollins. He talks to Henry Rollins
when he
almost hits him with the snow truck.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. Blow holes in that theory.
Well, no, it didn't blow.
In mine.
It didn't blow holes in your theory. They just didn't stick to the science of their movie. Either that or they were trying to change the science halfway through.
The hard science of how your soul gets to become a... No,
I mean, that's part of the agreement that we go on, you know, with the filmmakers. The agreement is, okay, you're setting up these rules of this world.
Yeah.
We will go on this journey with you. They set up the rules. Then they tried to change them halfway through. And then we kind of went back to it.
You know what? Let's talk about that, too, because... They didn't really do a good job of explaining why this was happening. Usually in movies like this, like Big.
The harmonica.
I know, but why was it so magical? Why is this kid's wish getting granted? And actually, did he even wish for his dad to be back?
He said he did.
Okay. Yeah, so he's building the snowman.
He said, I wished it. I played the harmonica and I wished that you would come back.
I wished for you to come back. Okay, but really, like, what unfinished business is there to do other than for this guy to apologize to his kid. Hey,
over and over
I missed
again.
Your big game.
Over and over again. It was like this movie wasn't exactly an uplifting holiday story, and it wasn't a story about love. It was a story about punishment. Jack Frost was being punished.
It's purgatory for him.
Yes, it was. He was stuck in a snowman body in the middle of an Indian summer where, you know, suddenly it's going to be 70 degrees outside and all the snow's melting.
Yeah.
And he's got to do all these things. He's got to make up for missing his kid's game and making it across a hot, I mean, really, it's 70 degrees. The parking lot's not going to be that freaking hot.
No.
But it's like steaming. He gets there and it's steaming.
Yeah.
And he's trying to get across. Like, he's doing everything.
It's true.
Killing himself to make his son happy, to be there for his boy.
So that then he can leave him again.
So he can leave him.
Ultimately, at the end of the... I mean, where was the unfinished... okay, I get it. I guess it's a bit of a redemption story. I don't know.
Well,
I was never really not on Michael Keaton's side.
Yeah.
Because I thought he was, like, so likable. Hey, sorry this guy picked
over-likable.
A career.
He was overly likable.
Yeah.
They made him too likable as a character. They really should have made him a little more flawed. You needed a reason as an audience, and you didn't have to hate the character, but you did have to kind of lack some of the sympathy.
Yeah, I
and then feel like, oh, okay, you know,
it's
and then
just,
the character redeems himself. He's supposed to go through an arc, and he didn't. Making it to his son's hockey game is not a character arc.
And he barely made it there at the end, and it's like...
Made it with 3 seconds left.
And he's a snowman.
But he's a snowman.
So it's like, what are you going to do? You can't hug your kid. No one else is going to know that your dad made it to the game, so what the fuck
does
it matter?
Well, and it doesn't mean anything for the audience either, because he's a snowman. We understand this. He's a snowman. And we're sitting here thinking, as audience members... This selfish fuck wants his dad to be at a fucking game. He's a fucking snowman. You want him at the game, you better fucking pull him over there.
Yeah, find a way so he doesn't have to melt.
Exactly.
In that morbid scene where he's trying to get to your game.
Right.
Across hot
Instead, he gets like a fucking corgi to pull him on a sled half the way.
Good times.
It made me, things like that made me angry watching this movie.
It's, why make this movie? What's the story you're trying to tell? Why?
Sometimes, Joel, and you know this as well as I do, sometimes they make films, they greenlight films to play with the technology.
Oh, you think it was one of those, huh?
It's kind of like how I felt like The Matrix 3 or 2. Was it 2?
It was 2 where we have the multiple.
Was a tech demo for Superman. when they were playing around with the flight physics and stuff.
That's true.
I almost felt like that movie, wow, this movie had the best Superman fight scene ever, and it was The Matrix. This feels like it was a tech demo for Superman.
Huh.
And that's kind of what I feel like maybe Jack Frost was. You know, you get these film projects,
and
it's not like that's, you know, the studios, you know, you hear the stories about, like, they get kickbacks for, making these films and doing this and doing that. I think what they thought they had on their hands, I think studios are desperately trying to find that marketable holiday movie that is going to last the test of time. It's going to stand that test of time. For some reason, they fucking struck gold with Home Alone. For some reason, people like keyed into that movie and they're like, we love Die Hard with a little kid. You know, that's really fun. What's a successful action holiday movie? Die Hard.
Yeah.
Let's make it a kid stuck in his house and he's fighting off burglars.
It's one of those
G-rated Die Hard.
What do they call it? They call it like a quadrant movie where it's got to hit all four quadrants. It's got to appeal to young, old, male, and female.
Exactly.
So basically everybody.
Exactly. And this doesn't have it.
I don't think it has
any of it. They had what they thought was a character. They created what they thought would be a marketable character. You look at that character and you see McDonald's
toys.
Or Burger King toys.
Yeah.
You see the Happy Meals. You see,
but the,
like,
design is so frightening.
The design,
who wants a George Clooney looking?
It is. It's terrifying.
Snowman.
And it screams of, we did not focus group this thing at all.
Which usually I applaud.
Yeah.
The lack of focus
grouping. But you need to. When you're going to create something like this and try to market it to kids.
Yeah.
You need to focus group it. Like, you compare this snowman to the Olaf character in Frozen. The snowman character that you see there, that character's adorable.
Yeah.
I would buy little figurines of that snowman.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm hearing good things about it.
The movie's really good.
Should I check it out?
Yeah.
I like Tangled.
You should. I like Tangled. I like that they're bringing back the musical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did that with Tangled
mm-hmm.
and they did it with this, where it's, you know, it's that traditional Disney musical format, but it's in
3D.
The 3D stuff. It's the 3D rendered graphics. It's a beautiful story. I love that it's based more on family love than it is like a prince is going to rescue me.
Yeah, exactly.
I really liked it. It screams of Wicked.
Oh,
And it didn't surprise me at all to find out that Idina Menzel, who's Elphaba in Wicked, is actually one of the voices.
Oh,
in this.
Interesting.
Yeah, but the songs are good.
Hmm. Who did the music, Tina?
Christoph Beck did the score.
Oh, I love that guy.
Right?
Yeah.
It's all really catchy. It's good. You could tell, like, right off the bat, there's going to be Frozen on Broadway. There'll be...
Well, I don't think Disney makes a movie without thinking about that story tie-in stuff.
No.
But it's when they can make... I like how we've totally switched gears to talking about this movie. But it's... It's when you have all these things tied, like, you have to do this, you have to do this, and it's still a nice, entertaining movie, and the songs are still good, and it pleases everybody.
Uh-huh.
That's hard. That's lightning in a bottle. It's hard to do. So, conversely, Jack Frost was attempting to do these things and failed miserably
because all it was, you don't get out of the downer territory at all. In this movie.
Or at least through the... Who's going to sit through the first 40 minutes of this horrible story about this kid losing his father before... It is. It's like 35 minutes before he even turns into a snowman.
Yes.
And even then, I don't want to... It doesn't really pick up. Now it's just we get to watch this creepy snowman.
Which could have been creepier. And I'm almost wishing they had gone with this. When they were making the snowman, Michael Keaton comes home at the beginning of the movie, and he's playing with his kid. They're making a snowman in the front yard. And he's like, all right, Dad, we got to give him a nose. And he pulls this piece of wood out and is about to give the snowman a penis.
Yeah, I saw that.
I would have loved to have seen this movie. I would have loved to have seen, like, if he just, Dad, that's funny. Keep it there. And the snowman has a cock. And, like, the next year, he comes back, and he's just got this wooden cock, and he's running around trying to fuck chicks. I don't know. That would have been, and now I'm being really crass, but that would have been more interesting for me. Just this horn dog snowman. Like, let's make it that this kid was an only, like, he lost his mother earlier, and, like, his dad was all he had, and then his dad passed away. And so then, like, his dad comes back maybe 5 years later,
and
this kid's
guy.
A little more grown up.
Ooh.
He's, you know, maybe graduated, and he's maybe in the midst of, or just finishing college, and Jack Frost comes back as a snowman, and he's, like, this horny, come on, you know, I've been dead for 5 years. I got to make sure that the old, that the hardware still works.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe
corn cob pipe.
Exactly. Maybe he's a little bit more crass, a little more, he's a horny old man. I would have loved to have seen this Jack Frost movie.
That sounds fun. It'd be like, a little bit of Monkey Bone, actually, is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
There you go.
Without the Brendan Fraser.
There's the sequel, which I applaud.
Maybe they should make a Jack Frost 2 starring Brendan Fraser.
Well, there's somebody else's career. Did Michael Keaton's career rebound after this? I mean, aside from Toy Story 3?
Not really, but honestly.
Was this the end?
Honestly, I don't think Michael Keaton's career has rebounded since like Multiplicity and
yeah.
Like once he left the Batman franchise.
Yeah. He did Life. Did you ever see Life?
My Life.
Yeah, there you go.
With Nicole Kidman.
That's right.
Yeah.
I like that.
It was a good movie.
It was
touching, it was sad.
Yeah.
But he did a good job, but I wouldn't say that it was like a huge box office success. It wasn't a smash. He hasn't had a huge box office hit.
You know, he's
in
had
a
some...
long time. He was the chief in The Other Guys.
Yeah, and he's done more supporting roles. Wasn't he in Jackie Brown?
He's going to be in RoboCop.
And he's in RoboCop 2, which actually looks kind of fantastic. No, his role anyway.
Well, he looks. Gary Oldman looks like he's doing a good job at it.
Yeah.
I just don't know what the relevance is to making a new RoboCop movie.
It's one of those things where we have the rights until 2020 or whatever, and
so
it's gonna expire.
We may as well make it.
That's what they did with Spider-Man.
Go on.
Because I want to ask you a question here. What did you think about the soundtrack to this film? Did the soundtrack jump out at you in any way?
No, the soundtrack I thought was horrible. That's one of my next notes.
Oh, good.
Was that fucking montage music?
That
when he's in the studio recording,
it's everywhere.
He's missing his kids' game.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like in there and he's laying down tracks. Basically, he's like spent 8 hours recording one song. And it's so bad.
Yeah.
It's so like, how does it go?
My note is
some of the worst guy in a band music ever.
Yeah.
And I think like the chorus is, don't lose your faith, baby, baby.
Anytime you throw a lot of ooh yeahs and baby babies to fill out the syllables in the melody, it's when you know you're struggling. And so, obviously, Christoph Beck did not do the score for this film.
No.
He's not involved at all. I did notice, looking at the CD, there are 3 Hanson songs in here. Like, Mbop Hanson.
No way.
3 of their songs are on this.
They're good, though. Like,
I like Hanson.
Not back then.
But it just feels like if you remember what pop music sounded like when Hanson was big, again, circa 1998, that's what's all on this soundtrack, and distractingly so. There are a couple of montages where they just kind of have that generic pop music. I know IMDb says this movie came out in 1998, but the soundtrack tells me like 1986. It felt like a bad 80s movie.
Oh, no, I agree with you there.
And that's always one of my pet peeves.
Yeah.
You know, spring to get some good...
Some good original music, you know?
I'll get
some Springsteen. Santa Claus is coming to town.
I wouldn't mind hearing that again for the 500th time in this movie. Yeah, why not? Own it.
So that's, when he comes back to life as a... like I was going to say... you know, that montage music, it's when the kid is playing the hockey game his father didn't make it and he's horrible. He's just not doing anything. And they made this big deal about, you know, Jack was trying to show his son how to do the J shot.
Oh, yeah.
He'd get, you know, do this hockey, the J shot. Well, he tries to show him once and the kid's like, but Dad, I don't think I got it. And he's like, well, I got to go record. But Dad, I don't think I have it. No, but I've got to get to the studio.
Right.
You know, I'll show you later. But Dad, I need it before the big game. Sorry, kid.
Yeah.
He's not going to be able to do it right now.
Yeah,
like,
fucking brat.
Your dad has to go fucking work so he can pay for your fucking hockey.
I was going to say,
calm the hell down.
The fact that you can afford to do a J shot.
Right. So we watch this game as it's unfolding and we're hearing the bad studio music. And I'm going to tell you, the problem wasn't him not learning the J shot. The problem is that this kid just can't fucking skate on ice.
Yeah,
he's just a bad player.
Like a penguin out there.
He's getting his ass handed to him the entire game. He's not even getting into scoring position half the
time. Maybe he should stick to snowball fights because he does a pretty good job in that first act of like commanding.
Yeah.
You know,
that or surfing, like snowboarding on a broken sled.
Yeah, there you go.
Because he seemed to do really good there.
You got some skills, kid. Acting isn't one of them, and neither is hockey.
Was that chase not like a Juicy Fruit commercial to you? Like these seventh graders strap on their snowboards, and they're just like doing these Tony Hawk style kickouts and stuff. It's like they were all Shaun White.
Yeah, yeah. They should all have GoPros strapped to their helmets. It was that kind of commercial. More like a Mentos commercial, unfortunately, is what it turned into. This whole movie to me, you know, it felt like a parody movie in another movie. You know when they do, what's the Adam Sandler movie where he's playing like the washed up comedian actor?
Oh, yeah.
The one that was directed by...
I can't remember. Funny People.
It's got Seth Rogen and Adam Sandler plays this kind of older washed up...
And it was like 4 hours long.
It was a really long movie. I don't know if it was exactly successful. That director is hit and miss for me.
Well,
Thomas Anderson.
He needs an editor.
Yes, very much so.
No, yeah. he definitely needs an editor. These the Apatow movies just go way too long.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't mind a long movie, but you have to go somewhere. And the last one, this is 40.
And Funny People, at one point, Seth Rogen even says, dude, we have to get out of this house.
Yeah.
And it's true. Like,
it felt like it.
They needed to get the hell out.
Yeah, the audience was thinking that at the same time.
And it's one of the few movies I've gone to see at the old Studio Movie Grill up the street here off of Beltline.
Yeah.
One of the few movies I've ever seen there where it was me and just one other group, and that group left before the movie was done.
Ooh,
like they walked out about halfway through.
Of Funny People?
Yeah.
Well, the ironically named Funny People, which I think it was going for. This is 40 was the same thing, too. It was like it was a bunch of series of, here are these scenes that may or may not really gel together.
Uh-huh.
And then it just ends. It just stops. Like there was really no conclusion. There was no arc. It was like, what? Why did we sit through this?
Yeah.
I kind of enjoy that.
I think Judd Apatow needs to start writing movies that aren't based on his own life because he's run out of material. You know, you had Freaks and Geeks, which was based on, the grade school, high school stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had Undeclared, which was his college stuff.
Oh, did he do that?
Yeah, he did.
Oh.
And then after that, he went into
Knocked Up? Was that his next one?
No. 40-Year-Old Virgin, probably.
Oh, that did come first, didn't it?
Yeah. And then from that, I'm almost sure he had a movie before 40-Year-old Virgin. But then after that, he got into... Once 40-Year-Old Virgin took off, that's when he got Knocked Up. And Knocked Up just didn't have it. It didn't have
it. Oh, you didn't like Knocked Up?
That's why I was surprised This Is 40 got greenlit. That they're like, okay, we're going to go on and semi-sequelize this movie with these other characters.
Yeah.
Because that world was so uninteresting.
It's Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
Paul Rudd's got juice.
But he can't always save a movie.
No, that was clear.
Yeah.
In this and other films.
So Jack Frost.
But yeah. So going back to that Adam Sandler movie, Funny People, this felt like, you remember how, what was the movie that he had done in the movie?
Oh, like Eel Boy or Dolphin Boy?
Yeah, it's
or
like
something.
Dolphin Boy. And it's all throughout the movie, you're seeing the posters of him and he's this chick that he's banging makes him do the voice, the dolphin voice.
Yeah.
And they show clips from that and the trailer for like Dolphin Boy. And it goes out of its way to be like a parody movie.
Uh-huh.
Sadly, a little close to home because Adam Sandler has done worse shit than that movie.
Yes. When you follow it up with, what was the one where he played his own sister?
Oh, God. Jack and Jill.
Jack and Jill.
And that
looked exactly like it was a movie straight out of that movie.
The Chuck and Larry. This is what I'm saying. Jack Frost has that same feel.
Yeah.
Like if Michael Keaton ever does a movie like Funny People, where it's like him in the future and he's washed up, this would be the movie that they would show. Hey, remember when you had it big, when you had the big holiday
hit? Jack Frost.
When you were the puppet and the audience chuckles to themselves.
Well, are you agreeing with me that this movie should have been more of like a raunchy comedy?
You got to go somewhere with it. It's you can't make a holiday classic, a feel good movie when like the first act is just like death and people fighting.
Yeah.
And there were some sweet moments. I actually, I was talking some shit about this kid earlier. He's not bad. He's not bad for 1998 actors.
He
has some scenes. He has some moments.
I didn't think he was that great, and I thought he was directed horribly. Like there's one
That's
part.
That's probably what it was.
It takes a good 15, 20 minutes for them to even come to terms with the fact that like the snowman is your dad.
Yeah.
And like at one point, they have the big snowball fight where he and the snowman are sledding down the hill and escaping from the kids and, formulating plans and, all right, let's do this. Ha ha. Yeah, this is good. This is great. We're having fun. And then it all stops. And then they sit there and they have a talk. And the kid's like, wait a minute. You're crazy.
I know.
You think you're my dad? You're talking to a fucking snowman.
That scene needed to come earlier.
It did. It needed to come earlier, but it's because at the point it comes in, it's so absurd. It's you've talked to this thing three times now at this point. You've just fought a snowball fight with him.
Yeah.
You slid down a hill and talked with him. He clearly has the same voice as your father.
And knows things about you.
So
yeah.
If anybody's going to magically come back and inhabit the body of a snowman, why is it out of the realm of reality for it to have been your father?
Yeah.
Why would it be easier to believe that it's some other random spirit
it's just
that's possessed a snowman?
That's a good point. That's on the director.
Scenes like that that piss me off. I think that there just needs to be a little bit more care shown. But then again, it's not like it made or broke the movie.
No.
It was just kind of more of the same. It didn't do anything to help it.
Yeah, I don't know what you do to this movie to save it. It's broken from the premise, you know? Mm-hmm. It's Frosty the Snowman in live action. Like you said, unless you're going to make it horror, unless you're going to do it animated, unless you're going to make a comedy out of it. But the idea of having this live action puppet with the facial features and make it look like the fucking Crypt Keeper, it was frightening. It had like widow's peaks. Like the eyebrows were like...
Yeah, he had widow's peaks. He looked like W.C. Fields. he used to have the cigarette holder and a monocle. He was just missing those things.
Yeah.
And it would have been W.C. Fields walking around.
That would have been I would have enjoyed that movie potentially. But yeah, as it is now, it's and then like you said, it borrows from E.T., it borrows from Ghost at the end when he totally goes Swayze.
His
Michael visage. Keaton form comes back and he has a little moment with Kelly Preston.
And it's so trite. The dialogue is so true. He's like, baby, you look really good.
It's like,
what?
You're a
Are
ghost.
You kidding me?
You're getting a chubby there? You're about to go to heaven or hell. It never really says.
But like, it's like he could have been like, baby, I'm so proud of how you've done over the past year. Like, I'm very proud of you. I miss you guys so much. And I'm so sorry that I couldn't be there for you.
I don't regret anything in my life being with you.
I don't regret being with you. My only regret is not making more time for you guys.
Yeah, there you
something
go.
Substantial. Something to show that Jack Frost has actually indeed learned a lesson. And the lesson wasn't about the kid having to learn to let go. Because he was going to learn to do that.
Yeah, he was letting go, actually. When we come back to him a year later, he looked like he's doing all right.
I mean, he's getting pissed off, shoveling some snow.
So he's not going to play snowballs anymore.
Scene in the middle of the fucking driveway.
All part of the seven stages. It's okay. It's bound to happen, especially around the holiday season,
that whole scene is just, maybe you look good.
Maybe you sure are filling out that sweater.
You look really good. And
that Christmas sweater.
And Charlie. Keep it up.
good on you.
Keep playing hockey.
Good looking out.
And then like he dissipates and starts floating away.
Yeah, the wind.
And his final words, I will always hear you. Which is scary as shit. Like, that piece of dialogue is terrifying. I will always hear you.
Like when I'm grunting, when I'm going down on my girlfriend. I hope you're not listening then.
Don't ever do anything bad. Because I'll always hear you. I would be fucking... terrifying.
Yeah,
like, how
creepy.
Much do you think they had to spend in fucking therapy
for
Charlie Frost?
Well, here's the thing:
going
now,
through that whole scenario,
that kid is now for the rest of his life fucked up because at least he was going through the stages. It was a year later, and he was already getting over his dad. He was having temper tantrums, but he was dealing with it. Uh-huh. Now, every year when he builds a snowman, he's going to expect it to come to life, and then he's going to be disappointed all over again.
Yes,
thanks, Dad. Thanks for ruining my adulthood.
I mean,
he'll never have children.
We get to see this, like, you know, everything's going to be okay. He's playing fucking hockey with the bully in his driveway and stuff, but we don't see late at night. When it's dark,
when he's making he's snow pillows.
Yeah, snow pillows, and he's masturbating
feverishly
to snowmen. I don't know, man.
Oh my gosh, that's creepy.
That's what happens.
Never
that's what's
going to
happen.
Touch of a woman.
He's going to end up like killing people and like dismembering them and making like snow people out of them.
It's like human snowman.
Yeah,
like human centipede.
That's how this shit starts.
They'll sew them together.
The editing bay owns all of this intellectual property.
Yeah,
right.
We should mention that because this will be the we'll make a prequel,
right?
Jackie Frost.
I didn't get anything out of this flick. I really didn't get anything
it's
out of this
movie. It's a waste of time. It's a drudge. It's hard to get through.
It is.
And who are these people on your Facebook page that are like, oh, I like this? My girlfriend Katie. Admittedly.
She was the only one.
She likes it.
She said that she liked it.
Oh, was she the only one?
Yeah, she was the only one. Everybody else was like, I didn't like it too much. And there were a lot of I don't really remember it. And that sounds about right.
Yeah, because I don't know. I will never forget the look of that snowman moving in my nightmares.
No,
talking.
It was terrifying.
It's it's like an alien.
Michael Keaton a little creepy? Was he a little creepy in this movie?
You know, I gotta admit, I like the little scene at the beginning with him and Charlie. Charlie's the kid's name.
What about him when he first shows up to his wife and he's like, hey, my car broke down.
Yeah, they're doing some role playing.
Like, there's a lot of kinky role play in the beginning of this movie.
You know what it is? It's because Michael Keaton's one of the comedians. He doesn't like smile. He doesn't laugh at his own jokes.
Yeah,
and I think that's what sells him. Like, I don't know. I like Michael Keaton.
My lips are getting chapped. Well, I've got lip balm. You mind if I try it. I'm like, yeah. Are you fucking kidding me? This is a kid's movie.
That's the other thing. Yo, can you imagine how bored, if you had a kid who took him to see this movie, how bored he would like try to, he'd slit his own wrist in the theater. He'd never make it past Act 1.
Oh my God.
Anyway, which is why I think when it gets remade, we should totally make a horror film out of it.
Really? You think so? I think it should be a balls out comedy.
Yeah, you could do that.
Well, if you were going to do a horror movie version of it, what would you do? Who would you cast?
No, I don't have any casting for horror movies, but I would do it a
you
little.
You would do like Al Pacino.
I would deal with
the snowman.
I would I would stop
pandering. I'm in the cold here.
I would stop pandering to like the kids. Don't make it a kid movie. Make it an adult movie. It can be a Christmas movie, but
make it accessible. Like you said, make it accessible.
Yeah.
To everybody.
I like you want to do the recasting now? This is the part
well,
of the
I mean,
show
if you if you
recasting.
Want to, I've only got one other note, and I was just going to ask.
Let's talk about that.
Did you think that maybe Gabby should have started hooking up with Mark? Do you think they were setting that up?
I thought that's where it was going to go. Except you know that's not going to happen because of who they cast.
Yeah.
Like if they really wanted to do that angle, they would have cast like Ted McGinley or somebody.
You think so?
Yeah. Somebody
I thought
who,
this
like,
guy was. You know, he was. He's a handsome dude.
He's all right. They had rapport at the beginning when they're joking around.
He's harmless.
He's very harmless, yeah. People like him.
I think they were alluding to that. I think especially at the end where he's like playing piano in the house and the dog walks by and they do. I think there's a hookup.
He's obviously like a father figure. He's like taking him out, trying to get his mind off it throughout the entire movie about his dead snowman dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some potential there. I don't know. Hollywood is so base and just like surface. They would never cast Kelly Preston. To hook up with him. It's sad to say, right?
I guess so.
I don't know. They would get the.
She looked good in this movie.
Oh man, she looks.
She looked good. She looked
movie.
Like she had. She looked like she was. She had a little more weight on her than when she was in Twins.
That's how I like him though.
But when she was in Twins, man, that scene in Twins when she's like crawling on the bed and she's got her ass hanging out.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I think of Jerry Maguire. When she's getting banged by Tom Cruise at the beginning.
I don't remember
and
that.
And she's like, don't ever stop fucking me. That's like their first line.
I really think they should have spliced that in at the beginning of Jeff Frost.
It's like him, Michael Keaton's just going at her. Charlie walks in. They try to get him out of the action. And they're like,
that's the snowman.
He's too young.
The snowman's going at it.
you think it should have been snowman?
It should have been the snowman.
Keaton.
Why the fuck not?
Oh, he takes his nose off. Disappears.
Yes, and then puts it back where he had put it before
there
when he was
go.
Building the
mm-hmm.
Okay. So recasting this movie. Are you okay? So you don't have like a horror. You said you don't have.
I mean, you could take it that direction, but then. I don't have any casting.
Okay.
But if I did have to recast it, and maybe it's just because I just saw Ender's Game, but that kid who's in Ender's Game, Asa Butterfield, or Aja, how do you say his name?
Aja?
Is it Aja?
I don't know.
Aja Butterfield. That kid's fan. Did you see Ender's Game?
Yeah, I didn't like it. I fell asleep.
No, the movie's not good.
I slept through it. He's a good actor, though.
But that kid is great, man. So the whole time I'm watching this, I was kind of wishing it was a little Hugo.
Yeah.
Little
he was good in Hugo,
Ender
too.
Wiggins.
I really liked him in Hugo.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So you get him to play Charlie, endearing Charlie. And then you just go all brunette with it since he's kind of like got dark hair. So instead of Kelly Preston, I would do, you're familiar with the name Rebecca Hall? You know who she is?
No.
She was in Iron Man 3 most recently. She was kind of the female who he hooks up with in the past, kind of turned out to be a bad guy.
Yeah. Okay.
She was in The Town.
Okay.
With, what's his name?
With Affleck.
I like her in the Kelly Preston role because she's kind of girl next door, but so you can empathize with her. She can do a nice cry face, but she's still hot enough to kind of like be with the protagonist.
Yeah.
And then for the Michael Keaton, for Jack Frost, you need somebody who can seem like a bad boy, like he's a musician, he's out on the road, but he's still committed to his lady and struggling with being a father. I like Colin Farrell in this role.
Oh, okay.
That's
interesting.
Something lighter. He usually kind of does dark stuff, but...
it's like Colin Farrell's The Tooth Fairy.
Did he... What?
Is he no, in? No, 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 no.
Oh, okay.
I just mean it'd be his
like,
version of The
in
Tooth
that
Fairy.
Movie? Yeah, very much so. The only problem with that is he and Rebecca Hall are the exact same height.
Yeah.
So
that would probably be
there's
going
to be some apple boxes on that set for him to stand on.
That's all right.
But that's probably... Oh, and then for the Mark Addy character, the best friend, I go Jack Black because I like Jack Black.
He's always the best friend, man.
I know.
He's always the best friend.
I was a bridesmaid.
Which would still keep the Mr. Show connection with this movie. Because there's a Mr. Show connection with this original Jack Frost.
Yeah.
There were a lot of actors. In fact, like there's one point where the kid's going through TV and he's flipping through channels and you hear David Cross's voice on a couple of commercials.
Oh, I missed that.
The guy who's driving the truck
yep.
that they take up into the mountains, he's on Mr. Show.
Yep.
The weatherman. That guy's on Mr. Show all the time.
Oh, I didn't miss that.
Oh, yeah. So there was a Mr. Show connection to this movie, which I thought was kind of interesting. So, yeah, to put Jack Black in it would keep a little bit of that element.
That was intentional.
If I were to make this movie, first of all, it would be, like I said, it would be a balls-out comedy.
All right.
And it would be a relationship between a father and a daughter.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Mix it up a little.
I'm thinking that we could probably get, like, what's her name? Who was Little Miss Sunshine?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember her name.
Also from Ender's Game.
What's her name?
Abigail
Breslin.
There you go.
We get Abigail Breslin in it. And it's her issues. She's got daddy issues, basically.
Of course.
And her mother? Who do I want to cast as her mother? Let's do a little over-reliable Julianne Moore.
Oh, yeah.
Because what I'm doing, I'm skewing older. I'm skewing a little bit older for this story. And for the for Jack Frost.
I can't wait.
Dude, Vin Diesel. Just because I want to hear that voice for an hour and a half of, I'm sorry, I missed your cheerleading practice. And that's what they would do. Like, at one point, Abigail Breslin would have, like, some kind of cheerleading thing she has to do.
Yeah, she would.
Because, again, the mother died early on.
Okay.
So she never really got to know her mom too well, but she was raised by her dad.
Okay.
So she's like, you know, she goes to cheerleading practice and stuff, and then dad ends up passing away, and she ends up maybe getting a cheerleading scholarship to some school.
Do they have those?
Why not?
All right, sure.
And so he comes back as the snowman, and like there are parts where like he's maybe got like some kind of pom-poms, or he's helping her with a routine, or maybe like some cheerleaders are climbing up on top of him and he's like looking up and looking under his skirt. Some
kind porkies.
Of, yeah, raunchy comedy stuff like that. And as far as the best friend, Kevin Hart.
Yeah. Just because it's been a while.
Since we've thrown Kevin Hart in.
I almost threw a Mila Kunis in as the mother, to be fair, but I resisted.
Mila Kunis could be the Henry Rollins character. Just Mila Kunis constantly. Could be the bully.
she could be the female
cheerleading bully.
Yeah.
She still looks like
high school age as well. So
I don't think so. Yeah. It would be a hot mess. I don't know.
She'll always be Jackie.
I think we'll go with yours.
Oh, Jackie Frost.
Jackie Frost.
Sorry, I went off on
That's
my little
sequel,
tangent.
That's the sequel, Mrs. Frost.
No, I think we should go with neither and just bury this movie. No sequel. No memory of it. Let's do the Men in Black thing where we just flashy eye.
Well played. Well, before we do that, we've got to break down. What did you think this movie did the worst?
Oh, the worst. Uh-huh. Man, it's the design of that puppet. That puppet is so creepy. Now, I don't know what you do to make it look cuter. Now, maybe in your remake, it's all computer generated, but in 1998, for budgetary reasons, I guess, or just technology. And again, as we mentioned, the shots that were computer generated, pretty rough.
Yeah.
But man, that it's just so creepy looking.
Uh-huh.
And even if I think in an alternate universe where George Clooney was still in it, I don't think that would have improved in any.
No,
it's like
no.
Okay, great. Now you have a George Clooney looking puppet, and that's still giving me nightmares.
Okay.
So yeah, the design of that puppet's gotta go. Which I feel bad saying because it was a Jim Henson company. They were going on rough times there in the 90s.
Jim Henson didn't always do gold. They didn't always make gold.
Look at Dark Crystal.
Dark Crystal was good, man. What are you talking about?
It has good parts.
Oh, God. All right. So what I think this film did wrong, just from the get-go, is just the writing. They needed a script doctor to come in and punch this thing up, and they didn't do that. And unfortunately, now what you got is kind of just a mess of a story. What did it do right?
You know, the most enjoyable part of the movie for me was in the first act. I mentioned that there were like two snowball fights.
Uh-huh.
That first snowball fight with the kid,
where it comes up over the ridge and you hear the helicopter.
There's
going
a whole
on.
Sequence where it's like they make it like it's a war and it's like war times and little Charlie is like, you know, commanding this platoon. You go here, and there's a kid stuck behind. Gotta go in to get him. And like they're even treating like the snowballs. There's like a catapult, not a catapult. What do they call it?
Slingshot.
Where they have like a trebuchet, I guess is what I'm thinking. Where there's like a huge snowball and they're shooting them over. Look it up. It's a real word.
No, I know trebuchet. And it was font. Nothing like a trebuchet.
No, it was not. Okay. No. You're right. It's a
catapult. It was like the Wile E. Coyote strapping himself and slingshotting himself.
So they're like bombing these kids with snowballs and it's this all out fight on the playground. I thought it was done really well. It had like an energy to the directing and the editing.
And we never saw that again.
I know.
Never.
For a second, I was like, oh, this will come into play later. And yeah, there are other snowball fights.
No, but I agree with you. I thought it was going to come into play later as well. Like I thought, oh, okay, like we're setting up this kid to be a tactician.
Yeah.
That he's really smart.
Or he's a leader.
Yeah, he's a leader. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
That was it. He just cries.
Yeah. Just a bitch.
But man, that scene was pretty entertaining for like 5 minutes. It was very like childlike, and it felt like Super 8, like Home Alone, where it was like these are big kids.
It was fantastic.
This movie.
Fantastical.
Yeah.
And it had a sense of wonder to it.
Yeah.
It fit a holiday movie, a kid's holiday movie. And it appealed to like, oh, okay, like this is kind of fun. It's a little fantasy element. Mm-hmm. And then it just aborted that.
Yeah.
It went away really quickly. I'm going to go back to Henry Rollins. I thought he was the best part of this movie. I thought he was hilarious.
Yeah.
In just the three bits that he was in.
Uh-huh.
Loved him.
Yeah.
You don't get much better than that. If you have a certain part of this movie that you actually enjoyed, or if there's something that you really hated about this movie specifically, go ahead and tell us about it. Join us on Facebook. The largest social networking site in the known galaxy. If you're not on it, that's really
you're
ridiculous.
A loser. You have no life.
But yeah, you write us. Just look us up in the search bar, The Editing Bay, and tell us what your thoughts are. Tell us what holiday movie you think we should take a look at.
Yeah.
So we're not just looking at Joel's recommendations, because right now it looks like we're going to do Jingle All the Way for next week, and I hate that movie.
Well, we don't have to, but I haven't seen it.
Look, I'm trying to play a bit for the listeners. I'm trying to do a bit for them.
Oh, sorry, Joel.
God, you got to play your part. You got to follow my lead. So Joel wants me to watch this movie.
You have to see it, Joe. It's the worst.
Oh, I don't want to watch
it. It's going to be so fun.
Oh, my God.
We're going to shit all over it.
So send us your suggestions. Let us know what you think. And as always, we read, we try to comment on whatever it is that we see. And thank you for listening. I'm going to go ahead and wrap this thing up. My name's Joe.
And I'm Joel.
And we are The Editing Bay, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.